Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Mass vaccination continues. Drivers line up for a dose of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine as part of a mass vaccination clinic organized by the City of Odessa, Odessa Fire Rescue, the Odessa Police Department, and Medical Center Hospital Wednesday morning at Ratliff Stadium. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, February 4th, 2021. Local. Section A, page 3. Local News Roundup. Pucks and Paws. Pucks and Paws, benefiting the Odessa Humane Society, will take place Friday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Cheer on the Odessa Jackalopes as they play against the New Mexico Ice Wolves. Bring $5, cash only, and your pet. Designated pet relief area will be available outside using the south side lobby doors. Box office opens at 5 p.m., doors opens at 6 p.m. and game starts at 7:15 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/INMRLAHN. Gun and Blade Show. Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Tickets are $7 for adults, free for ages under 12, and $1 off NRA/TSRA or military with ID, and all law enforcement get in free with their badge. Only one discount/special can be used at a time. Two-day pass is $12. Visit tinyurl.com/y5g547vw. Chocolate Decadence. The Aphasia Center of West Texas and Concho Resources have scheduled a virtual Chocolate Decadence February 12th. Reserve your party pack to support Permian Basin stroke survivors dealing with aphasia's everyday communication challenges. For more information, call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/chocolate-decadence. 80s Valentine Movie Night. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm Road, 1788, Midland, has scheduled 80s Valentine Movie Night, Cinema Under the Stars, February 13th, with a showing of the 1984 classic, 16 Candles. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the show will start at 7:30 p.m. Free popcorn will be provided. 80s attire is encouraged. Admission is $5 and free for UTPB students and staff. For tickets, visit www.wagnernoel.com. OA News at oaoa.com. Man charged in fatal shooting. OA News at oaoa.com. A 36-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly fatally shot a 33-year-old man on the west side of Odessa. Raymond Philip Mosley, 36, was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Officers responded to Medical Center Hospital at 2:25 a.m. Wednesday about a gunshot victim, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. The victim was identified as 33-year-old Justin Payne. Officers reportedly made contact with Mosley. Investigation showed that Mosley shot Payne after a disturbance occurred in the area of 8th Street and Harless Avenue. Payne was transported to MCH and later pronounced deceased by medical personnel. Mosley was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond, totaling $150,000, and he was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Next of kin have been notified, and the investigation continues. Police looking for suspect involved in auto burglary. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly searching for a suspect in connection to an auto burglary and credit card abuse. The reported incident happened December 7th in the 2100 block of McGill Street, where a person stole several hundred dollars worth of property, including credit cards, an OPD press release stated. OPD has released photos of the suspect that can be seen at tinyurl.com/YTNCNEOQ. The suspect used the victim's credit card at the DK located at 3660 8th Street. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact Detective Jay Santana at 432-335-4964 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-00212-62. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, February 4th, 2021. Opinion. Texas View. Fort Worth schools should focus on learning, not better grades. The Point. Spike in F's demonstrates the urgent need to get students back in school. At first glance, the Fort Worth School District's decision to give students a broad opportunity to make up for missed work or failed grades seems reasonable. Between the stresses of the pandemic and online learning and a range of unusual circumstances for families, school has been a challenge for all sorts of students. Why not give them every chance to rebound? But the policy creates headaches for teachers and risks masking the very crisis it attempts to address, students falling far behind. Grades matter only if they measure learning and achievement. The change has shed light on the difficulties posed by asynchronous learning, which essentially lets students go at their own pace or don't go at all. They can follow along with the teacher at the typical class time or log in to do work later. Students can be counted as present if they have any contact with their teacher during the day, even a quick text message. Flexibility is a good guiding principle in the unprecedented time of the pandemic, but loose rules invite mischief. A cynic might note that because school funding is generally tied to attendance, the word presence has been defined way down. Like attendance, grades must mean something. A failed grade generally indicates material that was not learned or not studied at all, and that's the real problem. Students who've lost ground during the pandemic will feel the impact for the rest of their academic careers. Younger children will struggle in future classes. Teenagers will face increased dropout risk. Giving them a route to passing classes without mastering the material will only hurt them. There's a reason that one of Texas' pioneering education reforms was to curtail the practice of social promotion, or moving children along to the next grade because it was deemed in their best interest, even if their academic performance didn't merit it. Allowing makeup work is not unusual, but reaching back through the entire academic career is a huge task. Teachers have adapted to online work, labored to track down children and help them through obstacles, such as technological hiccups, scheduling, and myriad family dynamics. Their reward may now be months of backlogged work to assess as they finish the academic year. The sobering state of grades and the burden upon teachers also demonstrates the urgent need to get students back in school. Evidence continues to mount that with proper protocols, schools are responsible for little transmission of the coronavirus, including a definitive recent assessment from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There will continue to be exceptions, but the default needs to be in-person education, and quickly. We've urged the legislature to give schools every possible tool to fully open soon and make up for the impact of the pandemic, including steady funding that doesn't penalize them for what was beyond their control. Businesses, philanthropies, and engaged parents have roles to play, too. Unusual solutions will be necessary, and some, such as an extended school year or expanded summer school, may be unpopular. More children may have to repeat a grade than normal, and schools will need resources to accommodate that. The fundamentals matter most, and it's crucial that progress isn't lost in core areas, such as math and reading. The ultimate goal is to make up for lost learning, and that starts with honest assessments, including grades. Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Guest view. Medicaid expansion would benefit Texas' economy. By State Representative Lyle Larson. Say you were told that every dollar you contribute toward a cause would be matched with $9. Sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? This is the deal that Texas is foregoing by refusing to expand Medicaid. If we elected to expand Medicaid, the federal government would provide $9 for every $1 of state funding we put in. As it stands, we are foregoing 90% of federal matching funds. This is money Texans have already paid to the federal government that we are not accessing. According to a study by the Bush School at Texas A&M University, expanding Medicaid would result in an increase of $5.4 billion in new federal funds into state coffers annually, while providing health insurance to 1 million low-income Texans. When folks who don't quite qualify for Medicaid need routine medical care, they are often left with visiting an emergency room as their only option. Using an emergency room for primary care is the most expensive way to obtain health care. Without a way to pay for the services they receive, local taxpayers pick up the tab. Medicaid expansion would significantly reduce this uncompensated hospital care cost. According to economist Ray Perryman, Medicaid expansion would have a massive positive economic impact on our state. Due to an increase in health-related spending, reduced uncompensated care costs, and productivity increases, Texas would experience gains of $45.3 billion in gross product and $29.4 billion in personal income for that 2022-23 biennium. Medicaid expansion would benefit more than just urban areas in Texas. The percentage of populations that lack health care coverage are higher in rural parts of the state than in urban areas. This has resulted in the closure of more than 20 rural hospitals throughout Texas in the last 10 years. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken a terrible financial toll across industries. Many folks who lost their jobs as a result of the pandemic also found themselves without health care coverage in a time when a vicious virus is coursing through our state. According to an Urban Institute study, Texas' uninsured rate could have decreased nearly 25% had Medicaid been expanded, helping folks who need coverage in this critical time. Texas is one of just 12 states that has not expanded Medicaid, though we have the highest number of uninsured folks in the nation. In recent years, voters in red states, Idaho, Utah, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Missouri, have elected to expand Medicaid. A recent poll conducted statewide found that 64% of Texans favor expanding Medicaid. The legislature can develop a Medicaid expansion plan that is custom fit to Texas. It could include work requirements and cost sharing through premiums and co-payments. It could also come with reforms to prevent fraud. Several of the red states that have expanded Medicaid in recent years offer templates and ideas for Texas to use to customize the terms of Medicaid expansion. Refusing to expand Medicaid is a bad business decision for Texas. We have an opportunity this legislative session to fix this. If the legislature approves, we can allow Texans to decide whether to expand Medicaid in a ballot initiative. We recapture the taxes Texans pay to the federal government for education, highways, and public safety. We transformed education for future generations last session. We must change the future in health care this session for the same future generations. Lyle Larson, R. San Antonio, represents part of San Antonio in the Texas House of Representatives. He can be reached at lyle.larson@house.texas.gov or at Rep. Lyle Larson. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, February 4th, 2021, obituaries. Molly Hensley, Odessa. On March 31st, 1946, God blessed the world with Molly Louise Snyder. She was born, raised, and graduated from Canton High School in Canton, Pennsylvania. After falling in love and marrying Claude Edgar Ed Pullen, her two children were born before she made the long journey to Odessa, Texas, where she ultimately ended up for the next 42 years until her passing. Several years into life with Ed, the content couple resolved to have three pretty girls to call their own, Tammy, Kimberly, and Melissa. Molly worked with children throughout her life, showing kids the way to Jesus, how to be kind and love others, as well as the knowledge of ABCs and the like. On May 12, 1984, disaster struck as Ed went for a ride in a small plane with a friend and never returned, leaving Molly a widow with three girls. Being a housewife, the difficulty of finding a job came, and she conquered the task in her normal manner of prayer and laughter. However, her dream job came later at the YMCA in Odessa that she absolutely adored and allowed her God-given talents to blossom. Her calling in life was to cook, to make people happy, and to enjoy teaching and loving with children. She was able to do that in this atmosphere. Molly met and shortly after meeting married her second husband, John Hensley, whom she remained with until her death. John had four children from a previous marriage: Shannon Lopez, Thelma Bobskill, Richard Hensley, and John Hensley Jr. Molly was survived by her husband, John Hensley, her three girls and their families, Tammy Leva and her son James Patrick Cotton of Odessa, Texas, Craig and Kimberly Davis and their son John Thomas J.T. Davis of Palm Springs, California, Jason and Melissa Underwood and their children, Kiana Pullen and her daughter Arabella Perez of Odessa, Xavier Swan and his fiancée Kelsey Paris of Wichita Falls, Texas, and Molly Brienne Pullen of Odessa, Texas, and her stepchildren and their families, Joe and Shannon Lopez of Santa Ana, Texas, Thelma Bobskill of Santa Ana, Texas, Richard and Stacy Hensley of Coleman, Texas, and John and Tina Hensley Jr. of Coleman, Texas. She has many grandkids and great-grandkids that are proud to call her Granny. If you're interested in enjoying time with Molly's family, there will be a memorial service at West Odessa Baptist Church on Saturday, February 6th, 2021, at 1 p.m., with Pastor Matt Jones presiding. Paula Beth Scott, Odessa. Paula Beth Scott, age 64, of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life on Friday, January 29th, 2021. She was born on Sunday, October 28th, 1956, in Big Spring, Texas, to Gerald Scott and Victoria Merlene Miller. Those left to cherish her love and memories are her son, James B. Scott, sister Patricia Eaton and husband Frank, three grandchildren, Byron Alex Scott, Manahisha Scott, and Malik Scott, along with numerous nieces and nephews and cousins. She was preceded in death by her parents, brothers Gerald M. Scott Jr. and Ronald McCleskey. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 20th, 2021, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Glenda Urias Batalas, Odessa, Texas. Glenda Urias Batalas, age 65, of Odessa, passed away peacefully while surrounded by family on February 1st, 2021, in Odessa. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday, February 5th, with a rosary recited at 7 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 6th, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, and burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. She was born on May 2nd, 1955, in Odessa, Texas, to Manuel and Manuela Urias. She married Manuel Batalas on September 4th, 1970. By the age of 17, she had traveled to Innsbruck, Austria, Amsterdam, Holland, Munich and Frankfurt, Germany, Paris, France. She had an audience with Pope St. Paul VI in Rome, Italy, along with traveling throughout the United States. Her second-born daughter was born in Frankfurt, Germany. She enjoyed gambling, and in her most recent travels, she tried her luck at different casinos. Glenda retired from ECISD and was a Cruciesta. She was a devout Catholic and was a member of St. Joseph's Catholic Church. She was a loving sister, wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. She was number 9 of her 12 brothers and sisters. She had 7 children, 12 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. She was an avid shopper and could never enter a store without making a purchase for one of her grandbabies. She was an entrepreneur with multiple businesses. She is preceded in death by her parents, Manuel and Manuela Urias, brothers Armando, Mondo Urias, Ruben Urias, Samuel, Sammy Urias, Jose Urias, Rudy Urias, sisters Velia Carrasco, Yolanda Rodriguez, Socorro Coy del Bosque, Nana Carrasco, and her grandson, Brett Kobe Pena. She is survived by her husband of 50 years, Manuel Batalas, daughters Veronica Batalas, Amos, Amy Batalas, Lori Batalas, Ariel Batalas, sons Joe Batalas, Edward Batalas, and Manuel and wife Yvette Batalas, brother Ralph Lanny and wife Mary Urias, sister Sylvia Pilar and husband Gilbert Beto Villarreal, and her fur babies, Brownie and Princess. The family would like to extend gratitude to Dr. Darr, along with all the staff at MCHICU and Continued Care, LTACH. Thank you, everyone, for your thoughts and continuous prayers. Viola Mae Lynns Roberts, Odessa. Mrs. Viola Mae Roberts passed away peacefully in her home February 1st, 2021, at the age of 95 years old. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, February 5th, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with Beck Hand officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Viola is preceded in death by her husband, Cecil, and her son, Cecil Jr. Viola was born on May 31, 1925, in San Antonio, Texas, to Otto and Mata Lynns. On November 25, 1950, Viola married Cecil C. Roberts, Sr. They shared two children, Sharon E. Beard and Cecil C. Roberts, one grandson, Michael Beard, and one great-grandson, Tyler Beard. After they married, they moved to Odessa, Texas, in November 26, 1950. While her children were young, Viola was very active in Girl Scouts and Cub Scouts. She loved sewing, oil painting, ceramic painting, and to work in her yard. Until 2009, she lost her eyesight due to macular degeneration. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Steve Lemuel Holyfield, Sr., Laurel, Mississippi. Steve Lemuel Holyfield, Sr., 83, of Laurel, Mississippi, died Sunday, January 31st, 2021, in Laurel, Mississippi. Funeral service is scheduled for 11 a.m., February 5th, 2021, at Stonegate Fellowship in Midland. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., Thursday, February 4th, 2021, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Eliza Puente, Odessa. Eliza Puente, 75, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 2, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 7 p.m., Sunday, February 7, 2021, at Acres West 24-Hour Funeral Chapel. Burial will be held at 10 a.m., Monday, February 8, 2021, at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Daniel Vincent Younce, Odessa. Daniel Vincent Younce, 61, of Odessa, Texas, died Sunday, January 24, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m., February 5, 2021, at Northside Baptist Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland, Texas. Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 30th, 2021, page 2C, Opinion. Democrats don't really care about convicting Trump. The debate over whether to hold Donald Trump accountable for his role in the events that led to the siege of the U.S. Capitol has slipped into partisan farce. Let me say up front, I think it's an open and shut case that Trump committed numerous impeachable acts, and in a healthy republic, any self-respecting Congress would have moved within hours of the assault to impeach, try, and convict him. Over the 63 days between Election Day and the siege, Trump manufactured fraudulent claims that the election was stolen. He was recorded improperly, and almost certainly illegally, pressuring Georgia election officials to find the votes he needed to win the state. He invited supporters to come to Washington, to pressure the Vice President and Congress to commit unconstitutional acts so he could overturn the election he lost and hold power. Whether Trump intended to incite violence or just negligently incited it is immaterial. The violence makes it worse, of course, but even exhorting the peaceful intimidation of officials conducting their constitutional duties would be a violation of his oath. Moreover, that the president was derelict in his duty to do everything he could to put down the violence once it was unfolding as he watched TV and fielded calls for help is also nakedly impeachable. That said, it's becoming clear that the Democrats don't really care about convicting Trump. The impeachment article the House sent to the Senate was almost perfectly worded to give Republicans an excuse not to vote for it. Trump, quote, deserves universal condemnation for what was clearly impeachable conduct, pressuring the Vice President to violate his oath to the Constitution to count the electors, end quote. Texas Representative Chip Roy said in his explanation for voting against impeachment. Unfortunately, Roy added, my Democratic colleagues drafted articles that I believe are flawed and unsupportable, focusing on the legally specific terms of incitement and insurrection. One can quibble with Roy's reasoning, I do, but he has a point. Even in a political trial, incitement and insurrection are far more difficult charges to prove than abuse of power, dereliction of duty, and violation of oath. If House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were serious about garnering bipartisan support for impeachment, she would have consulted pro-impeachment Republicans such as Roy on how best to write the article. She would have lobbied Republicans to be floor managers in the Senate trial. Instead, she pursued a path that not only gave Republicans an excuse to vote against impeachment, but also guaranteed that Trump would remain a political albatross for the GOP. Similarly, the decision to wait until after Trump left office before sending the article gave Republican senators another excuse. It let them claim that trying and convicting a president who has left office is unconstitutional. Whether a president can be impeached after leaving office is a non-issue. He was already impeached twice while in office. Now, I think that claim is wrong, but after studying it further, I no longer think it's absurd on its face. And given how desperate most Republican senators are to dodge their duty to hold the president accountable, that argument is a lifeline. The irony is that it doesn't matter if they're right. The Senate will try Trump. And while it almost certainly won't convict him, if the Senate did, that would make it constitutional because the Supreme Court would never overrule the decision. Think of it this way. The Constitution clearly says Congress must formally declare war for the U.S. to start a war. But there hasn't been a declaration of war since 1942. We've had plenty of wars since then, and the court has never intervened. The impeachment power of Congress is just as non-justiciable as its power to authorize military force. But this is all moot because partisan politics has swamped the Constitution. All but a handful of Republican senators have decided that even if the Democrats can prove their case, they won't care. And now Democratic senators have decided to not even try to make their case. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, D. New York, and a slew of other Democrats have declared a quickie trial is all that's needed. Quote, this is a pretty straightforward trial, end quote, that doesn't require messy testimony or witnesses, Senator Chris Murphy, D. Connecticut, told Politico. Quote, I would hope we could get this done in a week, end quote. Why not? If the point of the whole thing isn't to hold Trump accountable, but simply to force Republicans to get on the record one more time, defending the indefensible. It'll play great in Democratic attack ads, but not in the history books. Jonah Goldberg, Tribune Content Agency. Opinion Extra. Congress bows to the pen and the phone. President Joe Biden has proved that, if nothing else, he has a pen and a phone. According to The Economist, he signed more executive orders in his first 2 days than President Donald Trump signed in nearly his first 2 months, and he was just getting started. Republicans have no standing to complain about Biden's spate of unilateral measures, given they were fine with Trump using exactly the same means. But that presidents of both parties govern this way doesn't make it better. It makes it worse. Some executive actions starkly usurp congressional authority, while others are firmly within the executive's ambit. Yet the sheer amount of activity that presidents undertake on their own isn't in keeping with the spirit of our constitutional system. The presidency has overawed a legislative branch that is only too willing to sign over power and responsibility. Congress has been an eager participant in its own neutering. James Madison thought the legislature would be insatiable, steadily accumulating power. Instead, it is the least self-respecting branch, led by people who identify with the interests of presidents and their own parties over and above the interests of their own institution. This means that Congress is essentially cut out of the action on important questions of national policy. Obama blocked the Keystone XL pipeline, Trump blessed it, and Biden blocked it again. Obama took us into the Paris Climate Accord, Trump took us out, and Biden is taking us back in. Consider what Biden did on his own the other day. He directed the Interior Department to stop new oil and gas leases on federal land and to identify steps to double renewable energy production by 2030. He created a special presidential envoy for climate, as well as a White House Office of Domestic Climate Policy, a National Climate Task Force, a Civilian Climate Corps initiative, an interagency working group on coal and power plant communities and economic revitalization, a White House Environmental Justice Interagency Council, and a White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. On top of this, he established a justice initiative to steer 40% of relevant federal investments to disadvantaged communities. And on the seventh day, Biden rested after tucking his pen back in his pocket. If Congress had passed a bill doing all this, it'd be considered a pretty active day. Instead, Congress stood on the sidelines and commented. I'm proud that President Biden is announcing a slew of executive actions on climate, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer tweeted. Schumer's only complaint is that Biden isn't doing more on his own authority. This is the same Chuck Schumer who has been a legislator since 1975, when he took a seat in the New York State Assembly, who has been in Congress since 1981 and the Senate since 1999, and who ascended to majority leader about a week ago, representing the apex of a national legislative career. And yet, Schumer has urged Biden to declare a national climate emergency because it would allow him to do things, quote, without legislation, end quote. This would be like Chief Justice John Roberts giving Biden advice on how to pack the Supreme Court, except it's unimaginable that a Supreme Court justice would be so openly disdainful of the legitimacy and prerogatives of his or her own institution. This is a particular congressional disease. As Yuval Levin of the American Enterprise Institute wrote in an essay for Commentary magazine, Congress has been delegating its authority to the executive branch for some time. What's new is that partisanship has created a loyalty for members of Congress that transcends their attachment to Congress itself, while more and more members consider their office merely a platform to get attention. Congress is weak and dysfunctional because that suits its members, Levin writes. It could renew itself only if its members wanted such renewal. All indications are that, no, it is perfectly content to be supplanted by the pen and phone. Rich Lowry, King Features Syndicate. Liz Cheney is not the GOP's problem. So let's get this straight. After a pro-Trump mob stormed the U.S. Capitol, waving Confederate flags and chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," the person some House Republicans want to vote to remove from office is Liz Cheney? Trump loyalists want to oust Cheney, Wyoming, as chair of the House Republican Conference to punish her after her vote to impeach then-President Donald Trump for inciting the January 6th Capitol riot. On Thursday, Representative Matt Gaetz, R. Florida, is speaking at an anti-Cheney rally at the Wyoming Capitol. Representatives Andy Biggs, R. Arizona, and Matthew M. Rosendale, R. Montana, are circulating a petition calling for a vote on Cheney's removal from the GOP leadership. The matter may come to a head when the House Republican Conference meets next week. The irony is that many of those leading the charge against Cheney helped Trump spread the big lie that the election was stolen and that Congress could overturn the result. Representative Paul A. Gosar, R. Arizona, tweeted a photo of the crowd at the January 6th rally with the message, quote, "Biden should concede. I want his concession on my desk tomorrow morning. Don't make me come over there," end quote. Representative Mo Brooks, R. Alabama, told rally attendants, quote, "Today is the day that American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass," end quote. Yet they have the audacity to allege that it is Cheney who brought the Republican Conference, quote, "into disrepute," end quote. When Trump was firing up the crowd at the rally, he went after two people by name, then Vice President Mike Pence and Cheney. Quote, "We've got to get rid of the weak Congress people, the ones that aren't any good, the Liz Cheneys of the world. We've got to get rid of them," end quote, Trump said. Yet for Cheney, it's not just Trump's incitement of the riot that justified his impeachment, but the fact that he refused to send help once the assault began. When House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, R. California, and others, trapped inside the Capitol, urged the president to call for calm, Trump refused. To the contrary, he incited the rioters further, tweeting as Pence was hiding from a mob demanding his execution that, quote, "Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country," end quote. Not until some 3 hours into the assault did Trump finally post a video telling his supporters to go home. Quote, "The president could have immediately and forcefully intervened to stop the violence," end quote, Cheney said. Quote, "He did not. There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath to the Constitution," end quote. But what is most stunning to Cheney and others is the lack of reverence on the part of some Republicans for the Capitol and the Constitution. A mob attacked Congress in an effort to steal an election by forcibly stopping the counting of electoral votes. 5 people died. And as bad as the riot was, it could easily have been far worse. Imagine what might have happened if the throng, carrying zip ties and weapons, had found Pence. Imagine if they had found the boxes containing the electoral votes. Yet McCarthy has backed off his statement that Trump, quote, "bears responsibility," end quote, for the Capitol siege, and is visiting Mar-a-Lago on Thursday to mend fences with the former president. The willingness of so many Republicans in Congress and across the country to move past the events of January 6th as if nothing happened is deeply troubling. One of the best arguments for proceeding with Trump's Senate trial is that it will force them to confront what happened. The entire country will watch the video of a Metropolitan Police officer being dragged down the steps of the Capitol and beaten in a scene reminiscent of Black Hawk Down. They will see rioters attacking officers with hockey sticks and flags, parading through the Capitol with handcuffs in search of lawmakers, waving Confederate flags inside the Capitol Rotunda, and rampaging through the Senate chamber. Too many Republicans want to avert their eyes. A trial will not permit them to look away. Reasonable people can disagree over whether it is constitutional to try a president after he has left office or prudent to do so, but no reasonable person can argue that voting to hold the president accountable for his role in one of the darkest moments in American history makes one unfit to serve. Before leaving office, Trump issued the report of his 1776 commission, which urged educators to, quote, teach our founding principles and the character necessary to live out those principles, end quote. Cheney showed that character. If the Republican reaction to the Capitol riot is to excommunicate her, then the future of the party is bleak. Mark A. Thiessen, Washington Post Writers Group. Guillain-Barre syndrome and COVID vaccines. Dr. Roach writes, many people have written to me about Guillain-Barre syndrome and the new COVID vaccines. Little specifics are known about this because there has not been much experience with these vaccines over a long period of time. As of this writing, there have been no cases of Guillain-Barre syndrome despite tens of thousands of COVID-19 vaccines given, either during studies or since they were approved for emergency use. The data with influenza vaccines shows no increase in risk beyond what would be expected without an influenza vaccine, and people with a history of Guillain-Barre have taken flu vaccines without recurrence in studies. In my opinion, the risk from COVID-19 is much, much higher than the risk of Guillain-Barre syndrome, even in people with a history. I recommend all people with a history of GBS discuss the vaccine with their personal physicians, but for my own patients, I see no reason why a person with a history of GBS should avoid any available COVID-19 vaccine. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, February 4th. Disconnect regarding faith may herald couple's demise. Dear Abby, I have been dating this guy seriously for a year. We have talked about marriage, and we were even looking at rings. Due to certain recent events, I have come to realize that my hope for his Christianity to grow stronger is probably never going to happen. I love this man with all my heart, but I also need a husband who will pray with me, have a heart for God, who will want to go to church and make decisions by praying and leaning on God. We have talked about this and what my needs are, but he's not sure if he will get there. Do I hold on and hope through my actions in life he will learn to walk with God fully, or should I let him go and try to find someone else? Signed, Broken-Hearted Believer. Dear Believer, if you can't accept this man just the way he is, let him go. You shouldn't marry anyone hoping to change him because it wouldn't be fair to either of you. If faith is your number one priority, it would be better for both of you if you looked further for a life partner. Dear Abby, my friend Gina and I have known each other for many years. The other day, she got into a heated discussion on Facebook with several other people we've known for years. It was about politics. When I read her post, I was shocked. She belittled and bullied those who didn't share her opinion. I have since deleted my Facebook account because I don't want to see such hatred. What do I tell her when she asks why I'm no longer on social media? Signed, Social Media Distanced. Dear Social, tell Gina the truth. Say you deleted your account because you were shocked when you saw people with differing political opinions being bullied and demeaned, which you found shocking and offensive. If she's foolish enough to push you for more detail, tell her how her post affected you. It's shameful that adults in this day and age cannot calmly discuss their differences without resorting to these tactics. Dear Abby, I am torn between two guys. I have known the first guy for a year, and we had some ups and downs. 6 months ago, he had a heart attack, but he pulled through, thank God. But since then, things have been very hard. Our relationship went sour, and we broke up. I met the second guy online a month ago. He seems very sweet and down to earth and treats me like a princess. The first guy and I ended up talking again, and the problem is I'm still in love with him. I think both of them are wonderful, and I don't know what decision to make. Please help me. Signed, Choices, Choices in Delaware. Dear Choices, before making any decision, it's important you fully understand why your relationship with guy number one went sour after his heart attack. Could it be related to his near-death experience? You need to have all the facts before jumping back into a romance with him. You haven't known guy number two long enough to really know who he is yet. Do not pull the plug on this one until you have more answers than you were able to put in your letter to me.
Horoscopes. Happy birthday for Thursday, February 4th, 2021. Unconventional, sincere, and highly effective, you have your own original way of doing things. This unique approach wins you admirers this year as you finally complete a very successful project. If single, you get bored easily, so it's difficult to find someone who will hold your attention. This you do in 2022. If attached, acceptance of conflicting attitudes and priorities is a must. Libra, fitting in more, balances you out. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 4 stars. Today heightens analytical skills. You'll enjoy deeper insight into the motivations and needs of others. There's a deepening awareness of the afterlife and a sense of unity with loved ones who have passed on. Tonight, you'll be reflective and draw on past experiences. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 5 stars. A loved one blossoms with a new beauty or talent. This brings you joy. Legal matters are concluded. You discover how to rise above jealousy or insecurity to bring a more transcendent and supportive quality to love. Tonight, you express your feelings with special eloquence. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th, 4 stars. Today's a wonderful time to toss out debris, to get neat and organized. Minimize stress with efficiency. Other people need time to discuss ideas and views. Patience and listening bring you rewards. Tonight, postpone decisions about love. You'll go through a change of heart. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 3 stars. Concentrate with delicate tasks or if using tools or machines. Check to see what commitments others have made for you. Be cautious about devoting precious time and energy to a lost cause, or you could create futile pain for yourself. Tonight, relax. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 4 stars. Make the most of your inherited traits and early teachings. You will feel a sense of hope and encouragement. Insights are revealing. Your optimistic, confident use of words will draw others to you. Tonight, a family discussion over dinner is eye-opening. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 3 stars. It's a good time for emails, calls, and dealing with the media. It's not the time to procrastinate. Protect the reputation you've worked hard to establish. Peer pressure is strong. Keep good company. Tonight, resist the temptation to gossip, as your words will be repeated. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 3 stars. Don't try to force your values on those who aren't receptive today. Associates are rather conservative. Comparison shop for the best prices when making purchases. Favors you perform now will be returned later. Tonight, make kind, generous gestures toward those less fortunate. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 3 stars. Your own mindset creates much of what is happening. Notes of humor and lightness are more effective with associates than an overbearing or severe manner. If you sense you're overbearing or expecting too much, pull back. Tonight, awakening to new values and philosophies. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 4 stars. Today gives you a flair for strategy and subtle action, and finds you unusually introspective. You're able to cherish your secrets and privacy. Those closest to you will know only what you want to reveal. Tonight, a favorable time to work with affirmations and visualization. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 3 stars. Today adds to your charm and popularity and is a good time to develop nurturing friendships. You'll be responsive to peer pressure, especially from those in pursuit of all kinds of pleasure. Tonight, enjoy yourself, but do keep your goals and priorities in sight. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 3 stars. You are motivated and enthused at work, but diplomacy and patience are a must to assure success. Separate family and personal issues from professional responsibilities. You will feel ambitious and competitive. Tonight, reach out to an elderly family member. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 5 stars. You'll feel vital and creative today. Your appearance improves, lending strength to your self-esteem. This results in good fortune that affects your personal life as well as your professional status. Ask others for help and express your love openly. Tonight, you will meet with deep and loving acceptance.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.